My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joe Singer and Tom Stallings host a great podcast called Take a Breath. Joe, tell us what you talk about on the show.
Yeah, so Take a Breath is a podcast for people who are really trying to build something valuable in their lives, whether it's a business or a marriage or whatever it is you're trying to do. We help you with some hacks to build your best life.
Wow, where can people subscribe?
You could find us on marketingpodcasts.net as well as mergeanalytics.com. And you can also find us on LinkedIn and YouTube.
And wherever you get your podcasts. So go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story.
My guest this week is Dori Clark.
Another instance is actually to look at what you were interested in as a kid, because that's the time when we often had a lot of time on our hands. And the truth is, yes, in some ways we obviously change a lot from the time we're 10 years old, but not that much. The people who grow up to be Bill Gates, they're the ones who were like assembling and disassembling computers when they were 8. But there were things that I did like when I was 8, and it was writing stories and like reading spy novels. And that's like literally what I still like to do. So going back that way is helpful.
Dori Clark has been named one of the top 50 business thinkers in the world by Thinkers 50 and was recognized as the number one communication coach in the world by Marshall Goldsmith Leading Global Coaches Awards. Clark, a consultant and keynote speaker, teaches executive education at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business and Columbia Business School, and she is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of The Long Game, Entrepreneurial You, Reinventing You, and Stand Out, which was named the number one leadership book of the year by Inc. magazine. Dori, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, thank you for having me.
I am thrilled to be chatting once again. You know, it's always interesting what you see people up to after these couple of years of pandemic, funnery, world changing, all of this stuff. And you've got a new exciting book that I want to talk about, but you're also producing Broadway shows. I feel like you are, at least from my point of view, doing all of the fun things that someone would want to do with their life. What leads you to all of and the Grammy Award winning jazz album as well? Talk about some of the interesting kind of highlights. I want to lead with the fun stuff of Dori Clark. Not that the other stuff is not fun.
Well, thank you, Nick. I always endorse leading with the fun stuff. I think that sounds like a good philosophy. So what you're describing in many ways actually ties in with a lot of what I talk about in my new book, The Long Game, because, ultimately it's a book. The subtitle is How to Be a Long-Term Thinker in a Short-Term World. And I really was grappling with the question of why it is that pretty much everybody pays lip service to the idea that strategic thinking or long-term thinking is a good idea. You know, we all think, yes, that's important. And yet many of us, most of us probably, don't actually do it, or we certainly don't do it to the extent that we want. And as a result, I think that our our quality of life or our enjoyment of life suffers for it, because we end up doing, you know, kind of a lot of stupid things like cleaning our inbox rather than actually doing the things that in the long term would make an impact, would make us feel like our lives are meaningful or satisfying or interesting. And so there's a concept that I actually talk about in the book, which I call optimize for interesting. And it's one of my foundational philosophies. There's so much discussion, as you know, of course, in contemporary culture, business culture, you know, about follow your passion. And you know, it's great. Obviously, if people have a passion, you know, God bless. It would be great to follow it. I mean, it's, you know, there's always the use cases like, well, does anyone really need the underwater basket weaving? But, you know, if you can pull it off, that's great. But it's also true that for a lot of people, they don't necessarily know what their passion is, or they haven't sort of figured it out. And I think there's like a lot of shame around that. Like, oh gosh, you know, I need a passion. You know, what should I be doing? Is there something wrong with me that I don't have a passion, or I don't know what it is? And that leads to a kind of a paralysis and stasis that I think is pretty unhealthy, because what I believe is that for many of us, we'll never figure out what our passion is just by sitting there. We have to try things. We have to do things. We have to explore. And so my philosophy is what I call optimize for interesting, because we might not know what our passion, you know, our sort of, you know, game plan for life is, but everybody knows what they find interesting. And so if we just consistently continue to make choices where we, you know, I mean, some cases we don't have a choice about what to do, but in the instances where we do, if we consistently choose the more interesting option, odds are our lives are going to end up in some pretty cool places. And so that is how, as you were alluding to, I've ended up doing some things like becoming a Broadway investor and being a producer on a multiple Grammy winning jazz album, et cetera.
You know, I love that idea of optimizing for interesting, because I like that you talked about, you know, because I do think you see this kind of passion shame out there of, oh, I don't know, or it's not what it is. But I also think what you touched on is also of note, because I think there's, you know, I think that also has some baggage with it that, like, you should, you know, drop everything and your basket weaving and only, we'll just go with basket weaving as a placeholder, and only pursue basket weaving. And that doesn't align with everyone's lives or what they're able to do. But the idea of optimizing for interesting seems like it takes the life that you have and that you're kind of pulling other things into that orbit, as opposed to, you know, this bold, and maybe not, I don't want to even give it the bold label, but the idea that you're just going to drop everything and go to the basket weaving.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, in my first book, Reinventing You, which I think may have been the one that was out when we first talked on your show a million years ago, I profiled this guy named Richard, and Richard was a financial reporter. He was on the mortgage securities beat, and then he was on oil and gas. And, you know, the truth is that was just about as exciting for Richard as you might imagine, which is, you know, not, you know, super interesting. I mean, he found ways to make it interesting, but it was certainly not his passion in life to be an oil and gas reporter. But he was looking, you know, he was creatively looking for ways that he could optimize for interesting. And so what he thought was really neat was food and wine. He was this big foodie. And so he, you know, was just kind of keeping his ears open. And he heard that his newspaper was starting a food and wine section. And so he raised his hand and he said, hey, I'd like to write for that. Can I do some things? And they said, Richard, we need you as an oil and gas reporter. You know, you can't just sort of jump over. And he said, you know what? I'll do it in my free time. Like, I'll volunteer to write the food and wine articles. And they said, all right, if you really want to. And, you know, meanwhile, I mean, yes, it was him taking on extra work, but he got to go for free to all of these food and wine festivals around the world. He got to, you know, try different cool restaurants. And it became this really special thing in his life that, you know, he wasn't throwing away his career and he wasn't making some kind of rash choice, but he was finding a really clever way to make his life, given the options that he had, more interesting to him. And it made him an object of interest. I mean, he said that surprisingly, it actually made him a more effective financial reporter because all of his sources liked to talk to him more than other reporters, because whenever they did, you know, he'd ask the questions about the story and then they'd be like, so Richard, what's the cool restaurant? Where do I need to go? And he could tell him.
That's such a great story, and I love your callback to Richard and to the interview and books of long ago. So, you know, so Richard knew what he liked with food, and you know, for the people that, you know, might be adrift out there and like this idea and think maybe I can do that, but what if their page feels a little more blank in terms of, we'll go back to the idea of the passion shame, because I do talk to a lot of people that are stuck somewhere and are thinking, I don't even know what that would be. Where do you start? How do you get to a Richard or a Dory?
Yes. Well, it's true. And I mean, it's kind of understandable in some ways, because so many of us have situations in our lives where, you know, for a lot of reasons, maybe you have been having to do a lot of caregiving, or maybe you just have a super, super intense job where whatever the existing obligations you have are so intense and have been so intense for so long, there's not even the bandwidth to think about it. You know, it's not like you have all kinds of free time. It's like, okay, you do the things you have to do. You stuff down your dinner and you go to bed, and that's, you know, really kind of all you've got time or bandwidth to be able to do. And it seems like some crazy indulgence to be like, oh goodness, what is my passion? You know, you don't even want to go there because it's a little depressing, because you wouldn't have time to do it anyway. And so it's very easy under those circumstances, if they persist for a while, to really lose touch with it. And that can be frustrating. What I would say is the following. There's really three things we can look at. I mean, the first is for people who do have just a little bit of free time at their disposal. I really, when it comes to understanding humans, I'm a big believer in the edict that people vote with their feet. And, you know, meaning we are making choices, we are doing things. And even if we're not really able to articulate it, we are doing the things we value. And so, you know, if a stranger were to look at your Instagram feed and it's, you know, whatever, 100 pictures of birds, you know, it's like, oh, obviously this is something that seems kind of interesting to you, or, you know, whatever that thing is. I mean, maybe in every spare moment, you're putting together models of, you know, whatever, planes. Maybe you're, you know, like Richard, you're going out to all the restaurants and writing up these reviews for your friends. But it's really interesting to just look at your behaviors, look at how you are allocating your scarce time, and see where that goes. Another instance, if that is not possible because you're just so busy, is actually to look at what you were interested in as a kid, because that's the time when we often had a lot of time on our hands. And the truth is, you know, I mean, yes, in some ways we obviously change a lot from the time we're 10 years old, but not that much. I mean, it's, you know, the people who grow up to be Bill Gates, they're the ones who were like assembling and disassembling computers when they were 8. Like, I wish that was me. You know, my dad brought home a TRS-80 and I'm like, what the F do I do with this? Like, like, it just did not click. I'm like, okay. But there were things that I did like when I was 8, and it was writing stories and like reading spy novels. And that's like literally what I still like to do. You know, I mean, my reading comprehension is better. I can read more sophisticated spy novels and write better stories, but it's literally the same thing as when I was 8. So going back that way is helpful. And then the third thing is a question that a former colleague of mine named James Altucher liked to ask, which is, if you were somehow required, if you were like locked in a bookstore and you couldn't escape, until you had read every single book on a certain, you know, shelf in a certain section, which one would you pick? Which would be the most interesting to you? And that can begin to give you some clues of where you would want to allocate your free time.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joe Singer and Tom Stallings host a great podcast called Take a Breath. Joe, tell us what you talk about on the show.
Yeah, so Take a Breath is a podcast for people who are really trying to build something valuable in their lives, whether it's a business or a marriage or whatever it is you're trying to do. We help you with some hacks to build your best life.
Wow, where can people subscribe?
You could find us on marketingpodcasts.net as well as mergeanalytics.com, and you could also find us on LinkedIn and YouTube.
And wherever you get your podcasts. So go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. That's a fascinating approach of going back to where you were, what you were interested in as a kid, or any of those things, and thinking about how one is able to optimize for interesting. You know, you mentioned this, and it really charts an interesting path, I think, with your work as well, because Richard being one of the older case studies in there. But as I was thinking about that, I thought, and as you mentioned, it makes Richard a really much stronger personal brand. So talk a little bit about how all of this, God, I was going to call it life well lived, but that seems like a way to say it. If you're doing this right, talk about how optimizing for interesting impacts your personal brand that you're building.
Yeah, it's a great question, Nick. I mean, I think at a certain level, one thing that it does is it makes you stand out because other people wish to do the same thing, but often aren't. I mean, you become a source of interest. You become almost a source of inspiration. It makes me think about somebody that I actually profiled in my latest book, The Long Game. For close to the past decade, since 2013, I have been participating in a program that the consulting firm Deloitte runs, which is kind of a corporate social responsibility program they do for transitioning military veterans. And four times a year, except, you know, during the pandemic, I would go speak for this program, and I would speak to service members that were about to go back into civilian life, talking about professional reinvention. And while I was at one of these sessions, I met a guy named TJ, and TJ had this vision. He was getting out of the army like literally the next week, and he had a vision of what he wanted to do, but he wanted to ask me about it. He was very nervous because he was like, am I shooting myself in the foot? Like, is this actually a really terrible idea? And what he wanted to do, he had 9 months. He was going to go to business school, but he had 9 months in between his separation from the service and starting business school. And he knew what he quote unquote should do, which is take a corporate internship and, you know, get a good job on his resume. But that's not what he wanted to do. What he wanted to do was go to sailing school and learn to be a skipper of a yacht. And he thought that would be kind of amazing. He wanted to spend the summer skippering around Greece and Croatia. And he's like, oh, is it, you know, is this terrible? Is everybody going to look at this and say, you know, what a flake, what a, you know, what a sort of shallow thing to do? And I said, no, man, you should do it. You should do it because everybody's going to be fascinated. That's going to be the thing that if they're looking at your resume, that's the thing they're going to ask you about. You become an object of fascination where people are like, man, I wish I could do that. I wish I had done that. And so it actually makes you stand out a lot more than everybody else who took the more conventional path. And so he went ahead and did it. And he said it was, you know, literally one of the best times of his life learning to do that successfully and getting his skipper's license. And, you know, sure enough, it has not harmed him. Years later, he has now graduated from business school. He now has a very successful job at a global pharma company. But it remains this sort of seminal experience for him getting to spend a summer sailing.
I love that. And I think that the resume window is, you know, one everyone understands, but it's one that helps really, really, it's a great snapshot of this, of the importance of optimizing for interesting, because we spend so much time kind of polishing up all of the other, I mean, whether it's the literal resume or the conversation around the resume, of prepping our answers to all of the really important questions, but just being able to talk about something that you're interesting in, we forget the fact that the audience is, I'm trying to think of what the audience side of Optimize, they're primed for interesting. They want to learn something interesting about you. And too often we kind of sand out those interesting edges and angles of our personality.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, what we have to understand is the person on the other side of the equation, whether it's the hiring manager looking at the stack of resumes or, you know, just whatever, the Tinder date that you're meeting in the bar, you know, they are just bored to tears because they've, you know, they've probably been through 100 resumes or 100 dates and everybody is saying the same thing. And it's just, you know, ugh, it's, it reminds me of an Ani DiFranco lyric. You know, she's a great kind of punky folk rock singer.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, I see the same thing every day. The landscape looks so bleak. I think I'll take the first one of you home that does something unique. I think that's very true here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about talked in and around the long game, but I want to ask the question that I often ask authors, if we're on an elevator and you say, I'm an author, and I just wrote a new book and it's about, what would you say for the long game?
Yeah, so I would generally say it's a book about strategic thinking. It's about how you can apply the principles of long-term strategic thinking in your own life. Some people, you know, do that in their jobs, you know, wearing their professional hat. But I think very few of us actually, you know, either recognize that we can or have taken the time to apply that same lens in our own life. But it actually even matters more, I think, sometimes in our own lives because, you know, we all have goals. We all have things we would like to do or like to accomplish. And I think we probably all also recognize, oh, okay, if, you know, for a goal that is complex in some way, it probably does take some time. It probably does take some coordination to figure out how to do it. And so if I want to end up with this outcome, it behooves me to be a little bit strategic about it. And so ultimately, it's a book about helping people get closer to living the lives and having the careers that they want.
Well, I think it's a great approach. And like you said, I think something that we need to spend more time on. And I have five kids, so I have a plethora of dad jokes. Every time I see the cover of it, it makes me, or when we talk about it, I see the cover in my head and it makes me want to say the long game because
yes,
of all
of
the
O's.
A lot of the O's. But I love that because it's, again, just like we were talking about before, kind of a perfect illustration there. So I want to rewind even further back, because actually we last chatted on this podcast, episode 2, 3, very early on. But we even chatted before that on a podcast I had called The Work Talk Show long ago. Shout out to my previous co-host there, DJ Waldo. But we talked about, you know, how work gets done today. And inadvertently, even not knowing that we were going to talk today, I was talking with a colleague about podcasting and just, you know, it was one of those, how do you do what you do conversations that you have with someone? And they're like, wow, this sounds like a lot of work. How do you do it? And I said, well, I batch my tasks. I have a day of the week that's podcasting day. And I'm like, boy, that's smart advice. Where did I get that? And then I remembered it was Dory Clark. And so tip of the hat with the batching of tasks. As you've evolved into the long game, are there other kind of key productivity life hacks that I can steal from you as I continue practicing the work of my long game?
I love it. I love it. Let's solve all your problems.
Exactly.
Nick. Let's do it.
that's how I use podcasting. It's a dark horse mechanism for my own self-betterment.
Oh, amen. That's so good. Well, you know, I can share one that I really like from the long game, which is, you know, I'll sort of explain the principle and then shimmy down to the practical applications. But, you know, broadly speaking, I think, you know, most of us recognize that constraints often can be a positive forcing function to make us more creative and sometimes even to make us more efficient. And it's certainly true if you are, let's say, writing a sonnet, right? There's a million things you could say, but if you are forced into, oh, geez, okay, this has to be an iambic pentameter, and, you know, we have to have this rhyming scheme, it kind of clarifies things. It makes you be more creative because the words you were going to use, well, you can't use that. You've got to have something that rhymes with, you know, heel or whatever. And so it can create some, you know, interesting connections. And so similarly, the idea of positive constraints in business, I think, is something that I've become fascinated by. And a great example of that is someone that I profiled in the long game, my friend Dave Crenshaw. Have you run across him, Nick?
No.
Yeah. So Dave, I first got to know because like me, I do a lot of courses with LinkedIn Learning, and Dave does as well. And, you know, he actually teaches some courses on time management and productivity. So, you know, obviously he's a good guy to turn to in this.
Yeah.
But he has managed to take off 2 months per year. That's his schedule. Every July and every December, he just takes it off. And so, of course, the question is, well, how does he do that? How does he manage it? And, you know, what he basically talks about is for time management, it's almost like, you know, sort of resetting your circadian rhythms, like if you want to train yourself to be a morning person or something. Like where many of us make mistakes is that, you know, we suddenly get it in our heads. It's like, you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to get up at 5:30. And, you know, like, okay, you've been waking up at 8. Like, this is preposterous. You're going to wake up at 5:30. You're going to say, oh, I'm so tired. And you're going to just, you know, turn the alarm off and it's not going to work, right? So you have to do this kind of over time, this kind of incremental, you know, sort of jiggering the clock back so that you can do it. But in work, it's sort of the opposite, right? It's not when you get up. It's usually when are you getting off work? So maybe you've been working till like 8 o'clock every night. Well, okay, next week, you are going to make a rule for yourself. And the trick is it has to be an inviolable rule, but it can't be outrageous at first. And so maybe it's like, you know what? Every single night, I'm going to finish by 7:45 this week, and you know, I'm going to figure it out. At 7:45, I stop. Period. That's how it is. And you know, maybe the next week it's 7:30. You know, whatever. You work it back. But the key is that If you know, we know from I think it's Parkinson's law, right? The work is going to expand to the time that you have to fill it. If you are being forced to make harder choices, like, nope, sorry, you have to, you know, drop the computer at 7:45, it is going to make you more creative about the things that you can ignore, things you can streamline, the things you can delegate, because you suddenly have a mandate. You suddenly have a hardcore reason. This happens for a lot of people when they have kids or if somebody, you know, gets sick or something like that. It's like, oh, all of a sudden you figure out all these efficiencies that you never did before because you never had to before. But we need to start imposing positive constraints on ourselves. And the more we do that, as long as we do it in kind of a sustainable way over time, we can get a lot better and smarter at managing our workloads and create blocks of time for ourselves.
That's such a great reminder, and especially the last part, because I think a lot of us, you know, juggling professional and personal responsibilities, work, family, everything else, we, like you said, we are very good at optimizing for the getting stuff done, but being sure to kind of add that approach to add time for ourselves back in there, I think is absolutely critical, and we can kind of hack into it and use some of those same constraints for good also. Dory, let's talk a bit about, a lot of our conversation has made me smile, but what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yes. Well, something that I actually have recently purchased, and I'm now, I guess, a regular consumer. This is my second pair, maybe even my third. But there's a company called Suaves, S-U-A-V-S, and they are a shoe company, and they make their shoes from recycled plastic bottles. And first of all, I love that. Like most Americans, I consume more plastic than I probably should. So I'm like, good, we're doing something with it.
Yeah.
but it's, there are these great, you know, sort of stylish, comfortable summer shoes. So as we're recording this, it's like there's this heat wave going on in the middle of New York City. So it's nice to have these great shoes you can wear without socks. And also even the box that they shipped it to me in was this like surprisingly svelte box. And I'm used to getting so many things that are overpackaged. And so it was so nice. I'm like, oh, it fits in that. That's charming. So it made me smile for a lot of reasons.
That's great. I feel like I am getting with me, it's Allbirds. I have too many pairs of them, but I think I'm getting targeted for Suaves also, probably because of the similar mission. If you like this, you must like that. Are they the ones that flip up in the back? Do they have the flip? Well, like when you step into it? Or am I confusing it with another
shoe?
That
is not them, or at least it's not the type of Suaves that I have.
All right. Well, that
sounds intriguing.
I know. There's all sorts of wonderful sustainable shoes out there to get lost in. Dory, where can folks, so we don't get lost, go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you, Nick. Yes, do not get lost at all. You can go to doryclark.com and all the info is there, but I will especially direct people to my long game strategic thinking self-assessment. It is a free tool that I developed to help people sort of think through and reflect on how they can be a more strategic thinker in their own life and their own career. And folks can get it for free at doryclark.com/thelonggame.
Awesome. Well, that is easy to find. No one will get lost. But if you do, remember, because you're listening to the On Brand podcast, you can find all of these links that we've talked about during the show at onbrandpodcast.com. Dory, thanks for being on brand with us.
Nick, thank you so much. Great to talk to you as always.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joe Singer and Tom Stallings host a great podcast called Take a Breath. Joe, tell us what you talk about on the show.
Yeah, so Take a Breath is a podcast for people who are really trying to build something valuable in their lives, whether it's a business or a marriage or whatever it is you're trying to do. We help you with some hacks to build your best life.
Wow, where can people subscribe?
You can find us on marketingpodcasts.net as well as mergeanalytics.com, and you can also find us on LinkedIn and YouTube.
And wherever you get your podcasts. So go subscribe!
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.